Wherever cancer is, Hancock Health will fight. In any part of you and in all corners of East Central Indiana. From Indianapolis to Greenfield to Knightstown to Rushville. From hospital rooms to family rooms, we fight. With technology and medicine, with care backed by the wisdom of Mayo Clinic. For you, for your family, and for your future in Rush County. We fight cancer here. HancockHealth.org/cancer.
All right, it's time for Social Media Etiquette 101. It is the Kendall and Casey Show. I'm Rob Kevs here. Casey's out today. Our old pal, Brad Kloppenstein, in for Casey. And Brad, yes.
I've got treats.
Oh, my goodness. What do you have?
I have two things.
Oh, my goodness.
I have a six-pack of Indianapolis Brewing Company lager.
Let's see if Kev can drink it before the end of the show.
Well, we're going to have to
do Thursday.
We're going to have to let you choose, because I also have a six-pack of Pechanga from Sun King. So
nice.
We'll let Kevin choose. Do you have a preference?
You know what?
One is a Mexican-style lager. The other one is an American-style lager.
I'll do the... What was the first one? Repeat that.
Indianapolis Brewing Company.
I'll try that one.
Yeah, you got to go with that. All right.
I got to go local.
And so I get the Mexican beer?
You do.
Oh, my goodness. Boy, what a way to start the day.
I guess these are both local beers, aren't they? Sun King's local.
Oh, thank you, Brad. My wife is going to be so excited when I come home, and I'm even going to not lie, and I could say I bought it myself, but I'm going to say Kloppenstein got this for us. So.
Thank you.
All right, let's get down to, and this is why we love when Brad fills in, there's always an alcoholic treat of some sort that makes its way into my refrigerator.
Actually, Indianapolis Brewing Company used to be my beer.
I
sold that trademark to Sun King.
That's right.
And so as part of the sales agreement, I get access to beer.
That's incredible. All right, so let's get to Social Media Etiquette 101. And you're the perfect guy for me to have this conversation with. Because I think sometimes Casey's just too nice and doesn't actually give me an honest opinion. And maybe tells me what I want to hear rather than what I need to hear. You, on the other hand.
I will tell you what you need to hear,
absolutely.
Rob.
Absolutely. And you've been doing this for many, many years. You and I have known each other for a very long time. So it is election season, and sometimes on social media you will see people put out endorsements for their candidate of choosing. Like, you know, if you live in such and such a city, vote for so-and-so for mayor. And that's fine. I think that's wonderful. You know, I love when people engage in the political process. I think it's phenomenal that people put their opinions out there and try to encourage others to have an opinion that is similar to theirs. However, and I'm going to give you the specific example here, the question becomes, what is the etiquette and the responsibility once the person has put the endorsement on social media? So here's what happened. There was a guy yesterday who espouses to be this deep, deep conservative.
Now, before you go on, can I ask, good friend of yours or an acquaintance?
I would say an acquaintance, but somebody that I know well enough that we text back and forth, and I'll get to that in a second. So not like best friend, but somebody that I have known for, I don't know, 10 or 12 years probably. And this person has run for public office before. They've run for a very high-profile public office before. And they decided that they were going to put out how passionately they were supporting Mike Speedy running in the 6th Congressional District. And they went through this long thing. And look, I think most of the Speedy support, and I'm here, because once I got into this with this guy, I started getting messages from people who were observing it. I think most of the Speedy support, the overwhelming amount of it, is people are petrified Jefferson Shreve is going to get that position.
Right.
I think there are a bunch of people who consider themselves to be conservative who are so worried that Shreve and his position on the gun grab is going to get it that they're justifying propping up Mike Speedy in order to prevent Jefferson Shreve from getting the position. Now, my argument to those people has long been, there's way more than two people running. I mean, you got John Jacob running, Jameson Carrier's running. There's a whole bunch of different people who are running out there in the 6th. You don't have to pick one or the other. But we do this thing, Brad, in political life where we vote out of fear. And, well, if this guy is the most likely person second, then I got to go to him no matter what because I don't want this guy to get the position.
Right. And that's a problem because, yes, you should vote for what it is you truly want and let the chips fall where they may, because if you don't, you will never get what you truly want.
Exactly. So this guy puts this big endorsement out, and he's, again, it'd be one thing to just say, I hate Shreve. I don't want Shreve. I'm petrified of Shreve. Speedy's second place, so I guess I'm going with Speedy. That's not what this guy did. he did this big hullabaloo about Mike Speedy being a conservative this and a conservative that and this long. I mean, it was like a Dickens novel this guy wrote. And so I just calmly asked the question on his Facebook page, what is conservative about repeatedly raising taxes and growing government, which Mike Speedy has done almost every single year he's been a part of the Indiana General Assembly, which he's been there since the earth was young. I wasn't trying to be facetious. I wasn't trying to be flamboyant. I wasn't trying to be over the top. I was simply very curious. If you're going to tout this guy's conservative record as a reason that you're voting for him, then please explain to me the massive tax increases and massive growth in government that Mike Speedy has repeatedly voted for as a state rep. And I noticed, 20, 30 minutes, I noticed, on Facebook, they will notify you if someone has commented on a thing you've commented
on. Right, or liked it or whatever.
Right, yeah. And I've noticed I wasn't getting any response. And normally when I post on people's things, there are people who will comment based on they like me, they'll comment based on they hate me, they'll like or dislike or whatever. It's very, very rare if I were to comment on someone's social media post that I don't get a response in some shape, form, or fashion. And I thought, well, that's wild. I wonder what the comments are going on this page, because Speedy has such an abhorrent record as a state rep. I'm curious if people are buying this guy's bullcrap. And I went to the post and I went to the comments, and I noticed my comment was gone. And I thought to myself, now this guy, he would never strike you as delete comment guy. So I thought, maybe Facebook had
an
error. Maybe I accidentally didn't hit send. Maybe I opted out. Maybe my internet glitched, whatever. So I said, hey man, I'm sorry to post this again, but I'm going to post this again because the comment disappeared. So I'd like to know, what about Mike Speedy's voting record for massive tax increases and massive growth of government is conservative? Okay, cool. I noticed another 20 minutes go by. I said, I'm not getting any notifications or responses on this. There's no way this guy's delete post guy. He's that big of a wimp and a coward. But I'm going to go check. And it was gone again. And so I posted it for a third time. And I said, I specifically said this time, I said, I know there is no way you, sir, are delete comment guy. So what is going on here? Could you just, if you see this, just let me know and just answer this question and we'll all part friends. Finally, I get a text message from him. And so he was like, I'm chuckling or I'm laughing. And I thought, went to the post, it's gone again. And I said, you are delete post guy. You're that big of a coward and that big of a wimp. And you know your endorsement is that flimsy and this guy's voting record is that bad. You can't even answer a simple question about what is conservative about a guy who year after year after year, time after time after time, has voted to raise taxes and grow government. And he said, well, I'm not doing that on my endorsement post. And I said, my mind is blown, Brad, because your endorsement is so flimsy that you won't even defend it. You're just going to keep deleting my post asking you why you're endorsing a guy who raises taxes and grows government. So my question to you, Brad, is, was I wrong to repeatedly keep asking the question, or was this guy wrong because his endorsement is so flimsy that he kept deleting my comments?
I think in this instance, you are in the right, Rob.
Thank you. I thought so too.
I think when you open yourself up to an endorsement, it is fair game to then have spirited conversation over the pros and cons of that candidate. Now, if somebody goes there are guardrails, and if somebody's out of bounds or their comment's irrelevant or it becomes very personal,
right?
Those can go away. Every once in a while, I will delete something that I find does not germane to the conversation or does not help the conversation. But it sounds like what you were saying was, all right, here's some valid points. What do you have to say about this? And they didn't want to hear the valid points and have the pros and cons conversation of the endorsement.
Like, I was blown away because this is a very public person who has been around politics for many, many years. He has run and lost for a very high-profile public office. And I told him, I said, I never saw you being delete comment guy. And he goes, well, I just got a lot of stuff going on. I don't have time for this debate. But you had time to make the post.
Yeah, you had time, and you had time to delete my comments.
Right. And so I was just sitting here thinking about processing this, how we talk about this on the show today. And this is everything that's wrong with our system of governance. This is everything that's wrong with how we're being governed. This is everything that's wrong with who's governing us. Because this guy is admitting to me later in text message, oh yeah, I saw it. And oh no, I don't refute anything you're saying. I don't, even us being frenzies texting back and forth, I don't have any refute for what you're saying, because Mike Speedy is a big tax, big government person.
Well, and sadly, him doing that has now undone his entire endorsement, because we're now having this conversation,
right,
and far more people are hearing this,
yes,
than ever saw his post.
That, and that's what I told him, is I said, you may win 3 votes for Speedy. I'm going to try to cost him 300 here just because I'm pissed off, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and look, people can vote for whoever they want. If you're so afraid of Jefferson Shreve and the guns, that's totally fine. You're totally fine to be afraid of that guy's horrific stance on guns. I am not in any way endorsing Jefferson Shreve, nor would I tell anyone to vote for Jefferson Shreve. But it's not a two-person equation. And we are now at a point where people are so voting out of fear, and we see this all the time in the fall, where it's, well, you know, Todd Young's a great example. Everybody knew what Todd Young was. Everybody knew about his voting record. Everybody acknowledged his voting record. Okay, so you're voting for the third party, you're leaving it blank. Well, no, I can't let a Democrat get in there.
No.
And so I just said, it's happening in our primaries. It's happening in our general elections, where these candidates are so bad that they're not offering anything in terms of voting for. And the people who are endorsing them are acknowledging, hey, I'm full of crap in my actual endorsement, but I refuse to defend the very thing I just spent an hour writing a Dickens novel about. And this is why our government is in the shape it's in. This is why we are $34 trillion in debt. I promise you, if Mike Speedy gets into Congress, he will govern as he's always governed. Why would he change now? He's been, a decade and a half, or however long he's been in the General Assembly.
He was on the City County Council before he's in the legislature.
It's the same thing with Braun. All these people who are, well, Braun's a businessman. Braun also was in the General Assembly. And what did he do? 40-plus times he voted to raise your taxes. He voted for massive spending growth in 2017. In the U.S. Senate, he voted to print all that COVID money. Why would you think Mike Braun would do anything different when he becomes the governor? So the same thing with Mike Speedy. If Mike Speedy goes to Washington, he's going to be for big government. He's going to be for big government spending. He's going to be for big government programs. He's going to be a rank-and-file Republican. And that guy didn't even have the cojones to have a debate with me. Post guy.
So let me ask, in your universe, how many people are there whose endorsement would impact you to where you might follow that endorsement?
Nobody. I would pay attention if somebody's saying you should vote for somebody because, like, if I had a friend who came to me and said, hey, so-and-so is running for this office, you should vote for them because, I would then take that and try to confirm the thing that they've told me. I would never vote for somebody just because somebody said to vote for them. I would never do that anymore.
Well, I would think they would have to have your respect. I mean, and I say that just because Chris Jensen put an editorial in
Mayor of Noblesville
put an editorial in the Indy Star, and he came out and endorsed Suzanne Crouch. Chris Jensen's somebody I respect immensely, and I'm like, huh, that's interesting. If he's getting behind Crouch, maybe I ought to give her a second look.
Well, And everybody's got their own. Look, the records of these politicians are the records. And we see this so often, where these candidates get livid at me because I have the audacity to point out their voting record rather than being embarrassed by their own voting record. Suzanne Crouch has a voting record.
Right. She was in the legislature as well. She was a county commissioner, I believe.
And you are way too smart to let some guy who's running Noblesville, and I like Jensen, he's a nice guy, he's been on the show before, but you're way too smart to ignore 20 years of legislative history because some guy from Noblesville said, hey, she's great, when he probably actually desires to be lieutenant governor. I think everybody knows he's on her short list. So you're way too smart to fall for that, Brad.
I'm just saying, it made me take a second look.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, voters overwhelmingly think Trump is more competent than Biden. Well, that's a very low bar to hop over. We'll talk about it next. Kendall and Casey Show, 93 WIBC. All right, coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to have probably the most interesting conversation we've ever had on this show. Jake Query from The Fan is going to be with us. He was pen pals with Charlie Manson.
I can't wait to hear this.
And so we're going to hear that story. But first, Brad, have you ever paid somebody for their autograph?
I have not. I've never been a big autograph hound.
Never been to a show, or what are you even into that would involve people signing their autograph?
Like, beer stuff.
Really?
So the Leinenkugel brothers, I have a newsletter that the Leinenkugel Brewery used to put out, and by chance, I got the three Leinenkugel brothers to sign it over the course of like 3 years.
Yeah, but you didn't go to like some beer convention. You paid them $50 for their autograph.
No.
So there's a whole bunch of people now who are really upset at Tom Brady because he was a part of this event in Miami where it was a very large event, but they sold a certain amount of these meet and greets with Tom Brady. I think
like a yacht.
Yeah, like 100 people.
It was a dinner cruise and
paid $3,600, and it was like you said, it was a dinner, and there was a part of the deal. You basically hung out with Tom Brady for an evening. And part of the deal was you got a photo and an autograph. And a bunch of these people now are up in arms because the signatures, I think you could have him sign whatever you want, like whether it's cleats or a ball card or whatever. You can't even tell it's Tom Brady's signature. And they're all saying that he was hurrying through the signatures. He was disinterested. And they were comparing the signatures on these items to things that have been in auction houses, et cetera, that are, you know, Tom Brady clearly took his time on, et cetera. And you would never know, really, that this is Tom Brady's signature. And I'm kind of torn on this because on one hand, I thought, well, if I paid $3,600, I would at least want to be able to read the guy's name. However, maybe the onus is on the people who paid the $3,600 because that's a stupid amount of money to pay to meet somebody.
That's a dumb amount of money. I have two thoughts on this. One, the easy way to do that is I think the whole package included a picture of Tom Brady.
Yes.
So if you get a picture of you holding the item that Tom Brady just signed with Tom Brady, I would say that's authenticity.
Yeah,
so,
that's a good point.
So it doesn't matter. It's, yes, Tom Brady handled this thing. It's his scribble. It's on there. Make sure you have that. You'll be just fine. Don't complain that you can't read Tom. The other part of this is it Tom Brady like a billionaire?
Yeah.
Why is he doing this?
Yeah, why does he need to do this? I guess part of it, too, was he gave some sort of motivational speech. And who knows? I don't know for sure if he was like, this is something he's somehow financially already being compensated for, and this was just part of the deal that he's expected to do. But one guy said, because he had him sign the ticket to the NFL draft, the 2000 NFL draft where he was drafted. He said he gave a poor quality signature. I consider myself lucky and blessed that I got what I did because there were far worse quality of signatures. And so part of you does say to Tom Brady, like, you had 100 of these to get through and you couldn't just kind of take your time and smile at somebody and make them feel decent that they blew $3,600 to meet you?
I guess my thought is, if you're Tom Brady and you've agreed to do this, don't just phone it in.
Yeah.
This is a contractual arrangement at that point. I know that some people do, but yeah, what is it? Don't half-ass it.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. We got to get plenty of time for the next segment because Jake Query, the midday host, Querying Company on 107.5 The Fan, going to be with us. I actually found this out through a mutual friend that Jake was super into Charlie Manson. And then Jake and I had a long conversation and he was just casually like, oh, you know, I was pen pals with Manson. And I said, no, I didn't. And so we're going to find out all about it when we come back. It's Kendall and Casey Show, 93 WIBC. So he became pen pals with Charlie Manson. We got to talk about that. It's the Kendall and Casey Show, 93 WIBC. I'm Rob. Brad's in for Casey today. Jake Query from 107.5 The Fan, the midday show, noon until 3, Query and Company, joins us now. All right, so before we bring you in here, our old pal Robert Vane, a longtime political guru, he was just walking around the circle last week, and he came in, and we were shooting the breeze during one of the breaks, and I don't even know how we got on this, but we started talking about, because Vane's a big Manson guy. And so we started talking about various things. And he goes, you know who else is a big Manson guy? And, you know, when you hear that from somebody, Brad, you know who else is a big Manson guy? And I said, well,
Tex Watson.
Okay. No, I don't.
Crazy Larry.
He said, Jake Query. And I said, well, that's pretty wild. And so I don't know if he told me this or not, but it must have been. That's why I reached out to you. I said, yeah, Query got a letter from Manson when he was in the joint. And I reached out to you and we started
when
texting.
When Manson was in the joint, not when I was in
yeah,
the joint.
Yeah, Jack Query never actually been in the joint.
Right, yeah.
And I texted you and you responded to me with the actual letter itself, and it is the most amazing thing. You brought it in today.
Show and tell, baby.
Yeah, you want to hand it over here, and sure. I'll hold it up for people in the YouTube chat. So just tell me everything. Like,
well,
I can't. This is incredible.
You know, to say I'm pen pals is a little disingenuous, right? But the reality is this, to give you the abbreviated version, but I don't know how, Rob, or why, but I became fascinated by the winds of change of counterculture of the late 60s and just societally, right? I think people forget, and this was what was so interesting to me, like when you watch Leave It to Beaver, for example, and you think about, you know, Beaver Cleaver and Wally and, you know, yes, Miss Landers, no, Miss Landers, whatever. And then you do the math and you think, wait a minute. So that same kid, I'm not saying Beaver Cleaver,
right,
but that same era at 18 and 19 years old is then like dropping acid at Woodstock and heading out to Berkeley and protesting the Vietnam War.
If you
right?
look at the television shows, what, the Beverly Hillbillies and Laugh-In overlapped.
Correct.
Those were on the air at the same time.
So like that, the seismic shift that took place in this country has always fascinated me. And, you know, one of the watershed moments was the Manson murders.
Right.
I mean, let's be real. So that in itself always fascinated me. And then the fact that many of the Manson girls, the followers, you know, these were not, I mean, it was kind of a mix, but I mean, you did have privately educated, well-to-do, trust fund kids that got swept up in this. And it's just, how did this all happen, right? So I became interested in that. And then in reading just
it's
about
like when
all of
that. You were a kid, you were interested in it? Or like you were you an adult?
I was like five. No, I'm just kidding. probably like college age, right? I mean, early adulthood. And so at some point, I had, you know, I was aware of the fact, and I don't know how many people are aware of this, but that Charles Manson spent a great deal of his childhood in Central Indiana. He was born in Cincinnati, but his mother followed a guy to Indianapolis, and when Manson was, I believe, 5 years old, he came with his mother to Indianapolis, and then essentially, because his mother had a lot of issues, he was essentially raised as a ward of the state,
right.
I mean, for all intent and purposes. And so I was somewhere along my readings or research of Manson, I had read that he got more mail than anybody in the United States, you know, penitentiary system. And so I found the address that to write to him, and I wrote him a letter.
Like you put it in a envelope and sent it to him, and
just like writing to Santa.
You just put attention Charles Manson.
No, I mean I had, you know, you have to write, yeah, Chuck, you know, San Quentin. No, he was in the state California prison of Corcoran, which is a common, most people think he was in San Quentin. He was not. He might have been moved, but when I wrote to him, he was at state prison of Corcoran. And I had, you have to have his case number and, you know, the mailing address of the prison, but it was out there, right? It was public. So I wrote him a letter, and I literally just said, and I remember exactly what it said. I just said, "Dear Charles Manson, as a native of Indianapolis, I have one question for you. How much of your time spent in my hometown made you the adult you eventually became?"
That's it.
And that was it.
What year was this?
2002, I think.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah.
Let me look.
Yeah,
here.
It's on the.
So he wrote me back, though. At the time, I was working at WRTV, Channel 6. And I remember using my WRTV ad, because I thought, you know, I don't really, he doesn't need to know where I live.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't think he was getting out, but I mean, but you know, who knows, man? I mean, the guy has so many like zealot followers.
Right. Just,
who knows, right? So I gave him my work address, and it was probably 7 or 8 months later that I was at work, and I went to my mailbox at the station. And admittedly, when you work in television, it is not, we called it jail mail. It was not uncommon to get letters from people in jail.
Yeah. Yeah, Rob makes me open it.
So that's how you two met, right? Yeah. So I go down and I see this, and I thought, what in the world is this? Because it's made out to Jake's Quarry Incorporated, 1330 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana. And then I looked at it, and it has a stamp that says State Prison Corcoran. And then I flipped it over, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And it was from Manson. And he basically, in it, just recounts everywhere that he was incarcerated.
It's incredible to look at. You let me hold it early. You've got it professionally framed. It looks phenomenal. I hope you have it in your living room or something.
It does not. I will say it's not next to family photos. it's interesting because virtually everyone that knows about it or sees it, the first thing they say is they're like, dude, that's like super weird, right? Understandably. And then in the same breath, they go, hold on, can I hold that? And then they're fascinated by it.
Jake Query's our guest. We're talking about his letter that he received from Charles Manson. See, I don't actually think it's all that weird because you're such a historian, and that always comes out on your show, whether it's sports or whatever. You have such a great grasp of the history of the city. The Manson stuff, it's right up there with OJ in terms of one of the four or five most historically significant events of the 20th century. I don't think it's all that weird.
Well,
at all.
I mean, look, the reality is this, Rob. The reality is that through the flippancy and the fascination and all of it, you know, people brutally lost their life.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, the guy is clearly, I mean, was, I should say, you know, a sociopathic. I know that he wasn't personally there when the murders took place, but you know, he was responsible for it. He masterminded it, all of it else, you know, everything else. There's nothing good about the story itself, but it is historically significant, in my opinion, certainly socially speaking, right? I'll read this to you because
I love that you transcribed that. Well, and I'd love to know how long it took you because I can't read any of that.
It's pretty much illegible.
It took a long time. You know, it's not like getting a letter from the Zodiac, but it's close, right? So, just over the course of time, I was able to figure out what it's. I mean, it's not, you know, it's basically one run-on sentence, and there's some misspellings in it. But here's what it says, and I can read it pretty quickly to you. And keep in mind, he was thinking that 1330 was my address.
Right.
Home address, it was not. But he said, I lived at 22 North Meridian, same street you live on. It was my hometown in a lot of ways. I run Fall Creek Park, a gang called the Hoods, stealing bikes when I wasn't in 25th and Keystone BL, Juvenile Hall. Is it still there? I broke out there so much they put me in county jail. It was an old castle. 13 years old, I had spent a year in boys' school, Terry Hutt. I escaped in the court of the U.S. government, gave me a suit and tie, and sent me to Boys Town, to go to Boys Town. My U.S. courtroom, I signed a paper saying I could go out of state. The World War II court was in the same court. 1948, I went to Indiana Boys School, Plainfield, Indiana. The old U.S. Navy man taught me good. My ship was Cadet 8. I escaped a lot. I've always loved that state, and I left some for you, Charles Manson.
That's such an incredible piece of history. Like, I mean, you and I were talking about this. You are one of probably the only people around who has a letter, not a letter from Manson, but a letter about the state of Indiana and his tie to Indiana.
Yeah, I think Manson. Very few people probably realize that. And you know, Manson's thing, and listen, I want to be very clear here. I'm not saying I agree with this, right? But he has said so many times in interviews, Manson had a vendetta against his upbringing, but more so he took that out and he manifested that into, I think he intentionally wanted to be as deviant as possible as retribution for what he thought was a system that failed him. Now, I'm not saying he's right in that.
Right.
But he, if you watch interviews with him or you hear him talk, he would say, you hate me because you raised me. I am a product of you. I'm a product of your failed system. And you failed me. Now, I mean, there are thousands of people who had worse upbringing than Charles Manson that came out of it. I mean, they're that's a whole different talk show, right? But that was his. So, and much of the genesis of that ill thought in his mind originated in Indiana, right or wrong, originated in Indiana.
Do you believe the helter-skelter motive?
No, I think the motive was. Quite frankly, I think what happened was that Charles Manson was an aspiring musician. He was a decent coffee house singer. He met Danny Wilson, who introduced him to Terry Melcher, who was a record producer, the son of Doris Day, and said, like, oh, you know, let's do a jam session and Terry Melcher can help you out. And so he played in front of Terry Melcher, and Terry Melcher basically Simon Cowell'd him and said, look, you can't dance, you can't sing. You're decent. If you want to be in a coffee house, that's fine, but I'm not going to record you. And Manson really did think that he was the next big star.
He believed that.
Totally.
Yeah.
And so he was so angry and vindictive over that he then sent his followers into Terry Melcher's house because he had gone to Terry Melcher's house for the session. So he sent his followers into Terry Melcher's house under the order of just destroying everyone and everything in it, thinking Terry Melcher lived there. What he didn't know was Terry Melcher had moved out and was subletting the house to his friend Roman Polanski, whose wife Sharon Tate was there with all of her friends because Roman Polanski was doing a movie in Europe. Sharon Tate was pregnant, and so she had people there to help her out. And they went in and it was all about trying to get back with Terry Melton.
We could do an hour on this. Jake, this has been awesome, man. Make sure to check Jake out weekdays.
Hey, I'm on at 12 on the fan, by the way.
Noon until 3.
No man's
talk. You're the best, Jake. Love all you, man. Right. Thanks. It's Kendall Casey Show, 93 WIBC.
Put a bow on what was an absolute disastrous night in debate land. 93 WIBC. It is the Kendall and Casey Show. I'm Rob. Casey's out today. Brad Kloffenstein in for Casey. And Brad, we've talked about it throughout the show today. That debate for the governor's debate last night, a complete train wreck.
Obviously, John Swanis kind of lost control of that. But yeah, sadly, there wasn't a whole lot of substance that came out of it. I didn't see anybody change positions or drop any bombs.
Well, and so I think that's the thing, is that guy, Swanis, was such a train wreck as the moderator that it almost derailed. And you know this, he could be, whether it's anytime you're anything media, and the debate is kind of media in the sense, you know, it's on television. You depend on a flow. Like, our show has a flow. And if there were to be a time, and this has happened before, where, say, in the middle of the show, the transmitter goes down, or there's a power outage, or whatever, you get back on the air, but it's just kind of not the same once the flow of the whole thing has been interrupted. And this guy, Swanis, the moderator, just kind of made it all about himself. He was interjecting himself. He was giving opinions. He was reading Mike Braun talking points. And it was like, really? You know, for all this time, you're going to moderate this debate, and this is the presentation you give to the public? It made it impossible for me, really, to enjoy a flow, or there to be a flow. And as a result, you kind of don't get good opinions or know the opinions of a lot of the candidates when the moderator is so bad.
Yeah, well, and it started early on. All five of them turned on Swanis. And it was more of the five versus Swanis, which John Swanis has been doing this for 25 years, maybe longer. I mean, he was on Indiana Week in Review way back in the day. He's been doing Indiana lawmakers forever. And I mean, John knows what he's doing, but I don't know why there was the having them raise hands at various times, and they were definitely leading questions.
Yes.
And
you know, like he failed every aspect of this. You know, there may be a moment in the debate where then we have a back and forth the next day about, boy, that was kind of a bad question, or I don't know if the moderator should have done that. The whole debate, Brad, was about Swanis shouldn't have done this. He shouldn't have done that. And we were talking with Nikki Kelly about this. We talked about this earlier in the show. It was universally rejected. Like, all the candidates were rejecting it. The conservatives were rejecting it. The establishment was rejecting it. The mainstream media were rejecting it. I was watching that last night going, wow, we found something we agree on, which is John Swanis sucks at being a moderator.
Well, all I can figure is he knows in a Republican debate, most of them are going to agree on almost everything. So he might have been trying to find areas where they might diverge a little bit and there might be a little bit of separation. But yeah, it just seemed awkward.
Okay, so let's talk about the fallout from this. And obviously, we've kind of weaved this throughout the show today because it's kind of been the thread. We anticipated this being the big story. It was the big story. It was the big story for a very odd reason, which was the bizarro performance by the moderator. But again, I think Braun was kind of the winner by just not simply being there.
He was. I mean, everybody was talking kind of, well, I say to him. Chambers, certainly more than everybody else, spoke to him and tried to differentiate himself. Swanis kept bringing up he was there. I'm sorry that Braun wasn't there. He had work to do out in D.C. But you know what? If you don't show up, you shouldn't be considered, as you know, at least as far as that debate goes.
Well, and he lost the moral high ground, and I saw them, I think especially Chambers hitting him and Chambers people hitting him before the debate, saying, well, wait a second, you can't use I had to vote as an excuse when you missed votes before to go to a fundraiser. So you don't really get any grace, you know, in terms of, Mike was just out doing his job. I'd kind of tweeted out, it's a weird flex, because I think it was Marty Oaks. You know Marty?
Yes.
Yeah, one of the big wigs over there at the Chambers campaign was flexing on Braun about announcing that he would vote against the Ukraine funding. And I said, that's kind of a weird flex in a Republican primary to be banging on a guy for doing his job and voting against a bunch of unaccountable money going to a foreign government that in many cases just simply doesn't like us. But that's where we're at now, right? Like, people are looking for any opportunity to hit the opponent, And I just don't think you give Braun a lot of space because he missed votes before to go to a fundraiser.
Right. Well, and I'm sure he got advice. His people were telling him, listen, you're the front runner, far and away the front runner.
Yeah.
You've got nowhere to go but down. There's no reason for us to be here.
There's no way Braun loses this thing now, right?
I don't think so because, yeah, there was nobody. You know, even if the undecideds all broke to one candidate, nobody's going to get enough now to surpass Braun, I don't believe.
If you're Chambers and you're Doden, because they're going to have to wake up after Election Day, and barring some sort of unforeseen something, they're both going to lose. They spent a lot of their own money. Like, at least with Crouch, it was someone else's money. Hey, you know, out of sight, out of mind. And Hill and Rittenour didn't raise money for the most part. But with those two guys, dang, we're talking tens of millions of dollars collectively between the two of them. You could have had a lot of fun with that money.
Now, this reminds me. So, me and Jim Merritt, we have our podcast.
Merritt in the Morning.
Merritt in the Morning. We do that every other Thursday, except next week where I'm going to be on vacation.
Oh, how exciting. They didn't find a fill-in host for you?
I hadn't even thought about that.
You should, you know what you should do? You should ask Casey Daniels to be the fill-in host.
Absolutely, I should. You
see, I think that'd be the best thing you could do.
So, but we had Jefferson Shreve on last fall.
Yeah.
And I asked him the question. I'm like, tell me, how did this question go, or how did this conversation go with your wife when you said, hey, I'm going to drop the equivalent of a mansion on the beach in the Caribbean on a run for mayor that's probably not going to pan out. I don't think I said the probably is not going to pan out part. But in any case, I did ask him that question. And he's like, funny, we were on a walk on a beach in the Caribbean when I had that conversation. And he's like, you know, we just decided it was the right thing to do. But, I mean, that's the opportunity cost for all of these guys. You have to have enough money to, A, drop $5 million, and, B, not have it cripple you the rest of your life if you don't win.
Yeah, I have neither $5 million, and it certainly, if I lost it, it would cripple me, Brad. So I'm out of this equation. Hey, man, great job today. Thanks, as always. We appreciate you, buddy. You're the best.
Thanks,
yeah,
Rob.
Thanks, Kevin. Great job, as always, as well. And thank you to you, the listener. You're the most important part of the equation. Stick around. Tony Katz coming up next. Kendall Casey Show, 93 WIBC.